show with award-winning sportscaster Alan Cutler.
There's no such thing as an Alan Cutler humble opinion. It'll be a softly spoken opinion. There's no.
Okay. I always enjoyed being around you, Alan, the way you covered sports with a passion. You spoke your mind, and you treated everyone fairly. And I think that's why all the players don't mind coming back and doing this stuff, and they love having conversations with you and catching up again because you treated everyone the right way.
Well, I appear on a lot of radio shows, and I'll tell you, in all honesty, I enjoy being on your show more than any because we have such a good time and talk about a lot of great things.
Hello, Mark. Mr. Pope. 1996.
Oh, my gosh. What? Hey, let's give it up right here. This is my guy. Yes. I'm so happy to see you.
Hey, gratitude is a skill, guys, that if you practice, will give you a joyful life regardless of your circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I don't like, you know, about the team and is – how they, in my opinion, I felt like they quit against South Carolina. I felt like, you know, there was a time where they just got deflated in the game and they kind of quit on the coaches. And you saw that, in my opinion, in Stoops's reaction in the press conference after the game. So the thing, you know, that it got me was how well they came back and played against Georgia. So to me, they have the ability to go into every game and win.
It's a really good comment by Marty Moore, who my respect is off the charts. One of the great UK football players of all time, in my humble opinion. And you know what's interesting? As I say, good afternoon, I'm Alan Cutler, honored and pleased to be with you. I don't know if we're going to play the soundbite today. We've been sitting on it for a couple of days. When Vince Morrow met with the media earlier this week, one of the things he said was that Stoops did a really good job not only getting the players back in fold after the South Carolina game, but the coaches. And I thought that was a very powerful comment by Vince and a tremendous compliment. And it's one of the things that Mark looks at the big picture as a head coach. One of the things that I think he's really good at that doesn't get enough credit, because I'm one of the guys complaining about go for it with 9 seconds to go in the first half, or why you punt late in the game. So that overrides some other things, but I compliment Stoops a lot because he deserves it. It is what it is. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm so honored and pleased you are with us. Chip Rupp will join us at 12:30. Dennis Johnson at 1 o'clock. His son is lightening up in the elite program, which is wonderful. Not surprising. And you know, Woodford County's 5-0. Everybody forgets that Dennis is building a power in Woodford County. Had a nice comment that I saw by Dane Key. And give Kinsey at LEX18, Kinsey Lee, a compliment. And I texted her last night because there's too many fluff questions going on. That's just me. You know, the media misses Jerry Tipton. I'm not going to say me too, because that's too pompous even for me. But there's a trend towards, I'm not ripping anybody, overall speaking wise, softer questions being asked. And if Dane Key has been asked this before, I haven't seen it. That doesn't mean it hasn't been asked. And on the BBN show, well, you got to be positive. And so Kinsey did a nice job how she asked the question. And I really like Dane's answer. Come on, think about it. You've had three coordinators in 3 years. Could that be an issue? And Dane said, yeah, at times it was frustrating. He admitted it. And not to admit it would be kind of silly, I think, in a way, because how is it not frustrating? But by the same token, too, he had a really good answer coming out of it, talking about how, guess what? He got to learn football from three different coordinators, and in the long run, it'll help him. What a positive comment. What a positive comment. Ooh, I thought it was really good. Outstanding, as a matter of fact. 60 years ago on this day, and I was just on Facebook, Sam Ball's son, Sam, was a great player for Kentucky and a character and a really good dude. We lost him too early. His son, who played for Kentucky, put a picture up, Jimmy, of the score 60 years ago today when Ole Miss was number one and Kentucky won the game. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. So do I think Kentucky has a chance? I do. I do. A great chance? No. And look, it doesn't matter on the one hand that I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth on purpose. On the one hand that Ole Miss has played cupcakes. On the one hand, it really doesn't matter. It does matter that they haven't seen a defense like Kentucky's. That does matter. Jimmy, sink this in your cranium. You ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go fast now. Scoring margin. Guess who's first in the country?
Ole Miss.
You're a genius. 49.5. Scoring offense. Guess who's first?
Ole Miss.
Oh, man, you're a genius. 55 points a game. Total offense. Guess who's first?
Oh, Ole Miss.
Man, you gave that a lot of thought. I don't care if you're playing an eighth grade team. Facetious, of course. 670 yards a game. Passing offense.
I'm going to take a stab at Ole Miss.
You're really going out on the ledge here, right?
Yeah.
422 yards. Rushing defense.
Kentucky?
Could this be a trick question?
Maybe.
Ole Miss.
Really?
Yeah. And to be honest, that was my exact reaction when I saw it. Because I don't care you're playing the Sisters of the Poor. Nobody thinks of Ole Miss with defense. I don't. Do you?
No, but it could also be because the lower tier teams they play, Ole Miss gets ahead so much that the other team is just throwing the ball.
I would assume that's part of it. Yeah. I would assume also it's part of it. They've played cupcakes.
Yeah.
You know, but even still, I did not see that coming. Yards per play overall, guess who's number one?
Ole Miss.
Oh, man. You're almost batting 100 here. Now, this is interesting. Plays of 10-plus yards and 20-plus yards. Guess who's number one?
Ole Miss.
First downs. Guess who's number one?
That would be the Rebels.
As you're going, do they have any other nicknames?
Yeah, I don't know. The Mississippi Lane Kiffins?
Scoring defense.
That's got to be Ole Miss.
Tied for number one at 5.5 yards a pop. Now, I stand by this. That doesn't necessarily mean, could mean a lot, but it might not mean anything going into this game because if Kentucky can play the defense they played against Georgia, they're going to be in the top five in so many of these categories next week, but they ain't going to be number one. I don't think so. I just don't. And they got a great running game, and I think Dart might be the best quarterback in the SEC. I think he is. We'll see. We'll see. Could I change my mind? Absolutely. Kid from Texas is out. I think the kid from Alabama is number two. And I think the Georgia guy's like number four. And he's probably going to be a top 10 pick. So it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy how good some of this stuff is. So I'm really excited about Saturday. I hope the weather, and I guess you would say bad weather would help Kentucky. If it's that wet, that could negate Ole Miss's offense. I want Kentucky to, you know, play him and beat him straight up. You would think if you can't throw the ball, it should be wet, but it shouldn't be raining if the stuff that's going on down south, and it changes all the time. So, you know, I just looked it up online. I don't know anything. But, it, you know, Jimmy, as you know, this stuff changes so much, you never know how it's going to go, do you?
Yeah, it looks like the weather there, it's going to be, like you said, rainy all day Friday there, but Saturday should be fine and not hot either. It's high of 72. So you would think, oh, is it going to be, you know, because there's been some games down there that lately that have been real hot. It's not going to be the 72's nice overcast, but the field might be a little wet, but there should not be any active weather during the game. 5 to 10 mile an hour wind, so nothing crazy at all. Now, if the game was played here, much different story because weather here Saturday is going to be bad still. But should be fine down there. Same for the Alabama-Georgia game. I know there's questions about that, too.
Absolutely. Let's run through a bunch of topics, things that kind of interest me. We mentioned this last season, and I gave my dear friend Dick Hoopsweiss credit because it was his idea, and others have picked up on it, but he was the first that kind of mentioned, I was talking to Hoops on the phone yesterday, and, you know, this whole thing going with the Vegas and the quarterback who says, I'm leaving, and that kind of stuff. And I don't know who's telling the truth, but I tend to believe that the quarterback is telling the truth, because I don't think he went to Vegas for no money at all. And $100,000, as I've mentioned, as silly as it sounds, isn't a ton of money for a quarterback on that level, from what I understand. And with the head coach saying, you know, the offer didn't come from me, so it doesn't mean anything. And it's been suggested, and you can't do this, to come up with a boilerplate contract. You can't do that. This is business, free enterprise. But I still blame the agent over everybody, because they didn't get this crap in writing. You know, and I got to tell you what, if a school or somebody who makes the offer doesn't want to put it in writing, I'm going to go, why do I want to go there? And so, you know, this is the wild, wild west, as we've been saying, others have been saying, and it will calm down eventually, you would think. And I stand by what I said yesterday right away, which is, Jimmy, if you're a wide receiver and you've had, you know, three really good years at Holy Cross, or four really good years at Holy Cross, and you're good enough to step up and play, and Vegas now wants you to come there, and Barry Odom's done a really good job. They're in the top 25, which is shocking a lot of people when he got here. Who thought he'd be able to do that? Because they hadn't done it since like 78 or something like that. You have to be suspicious if you're going to get your money. You have to be suspicious. This could really, 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 really hurt his recruiting. I'll go one step further. Odom, the coach, although he can't play it directly. You know what I'm surprised? And I wonder if some coaches have done this. Like, for example, I'm not accusing Stoops of anything. Don't take this the way I'm saying it. But Mark said a long time ago he would give up some money to the NIL to help get players here. It's making $9 million. And by the way, do I believe him? Yes. Do I believe Stoops the only coach who would do this? No, of course not. You're making $9 million. You throw in $1 million. That helps you get five more players. You get to a better bowl game. You help keep your job. I mean, it's just shuffling of money. I wonder if somebody's done this, Jimmy, and I've said this before. So you're Mark Stoops. Can I play with your money?
Yes.
I'm going to call you Jimmy Stoops. You good with that?
Yeah, it's their cousin. Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy Stoops, you make $9 million. You need a couple players, and your boosters have given as much as they can give. And so suppose legally your lawyer writes it up that Joe Ishkabish, the big booster, you lend him $1 million. But Joe Ishkabish never pays you back. Nobody has to know, right? Mm-hmm. Does UK need to know? No, it's none of their damn business. It's a private deal.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to know. The only person who needs to know maybe is Uncle Sam. And probably not. But I'm not an expert on that, so I'm going to leave that part out. Yeah. So you give Joe Ishkabish a big booster, and I wouldn't be surprised if some coaches have already done this. It's in their best interest. What the hell is $1 million to Mark Stoops? You can say, well, Cutler, that's easy for you to say. It's not your money. Stop it. Think about all the money he makes, and think about he needs players.
Yeah.
He needs players. Everybody needs players. So he gives Joe Ishkabish $1 million, and that $1 million is additionally added to money given by then the top booster. I will be shocked, and we're never going to find out if somebody hasn't done it. I'm just shocked. It's as obvious as the nose on my face. Shocked.
Yeah,
and why not?
That has to have either happened already, or it's been discussed and will, you know, it's going to be something that continues to happen with NIL not going anywhere, assuming once you open this box, it's not going to go away. So,
no. Yeah,
especially when you put it that way. Like, yeah, in the long term of things, especially for college coaches, one massive recruit can change your coaching career, can lead you to a national championship, could lead you not even to a national championship, just going to a college football playoff, then giving you the next big job in your career, not for Stoops, but for any coach. That one big recruit can change everything.
An extra $1 million to Ward, who's tossing the football in the state of Florida,
yeah,
by Notre Dame, they would probably be undefeated now. So what would another $1 million by the head coach shuffling some money? And Notre Dame's got rich boosters all over the world. I mean, all over the world, it's kind of like crazy. They should have probably the best team money could buy. So the point is, if Ward was at Notre Dame, Notre Dame's undefeated. What does that do to the head coach? And there are some people questioning if he's the right guy because he lost to NIU.
I was going to say it'll save his job.
Yeah, and they're not going to fire him now, but your point's very well taken. Because he loses to another NIU, and if that continues, he ain't going anywhere this year. I mean, unless they fell apart. They're not going to fall apart, and that's fine. But the point is, it's all about M-O-N-E-Y. So here's my point about Odom. It's $100,000. Jimmy, if you can look up what he makes, he's not making millions. It was a huge step down, obviously, when Missouri fired him. I think they had to pay him off some money. I'm going to guess without knowing he doesn't make $1 million a year. I'm going to guess without knowing just on that level of college football, and I could be way off. He makes over $500,000 a year. At that point, it's called a loss leader. How many times have you heard stories about a store that will sell a product literally under the cost to get people to come in? Okay. And I don't know what went on behind the scenes with Odom, but I got to tell you what, and I'm guessing he talked to his athletics director. I'm guessing he talked to the coach involved. I wouldn't be surprised if the president of the university was involved either directly or indirectly in a conversation. This crap doesn't happen with somebody talking to the president. Probably wasn't Odom. Maybe. Depends on the relationship. And I have no idea who the president is. I have no idea about the relationship. But that's not 100-1 that there wasn't a conversation with the president of the university. Nobody who runs the university wants this kind of publicity. Nobody, without knowing what the hell is going on. My point is this, Jimmy, as you're looking up the number, I guess it's tough to find. It's a smaller school because you're really fast with your best friend.
No, I was just waiting for you to finish your thoughts. Oh. So his base salary is $400,000 per year, but he'll earn at least $1.75 million in 2024. Last year, he made $1.8 million.
I'm really surprised. So obviously. Yeah.
So the base is $400,000, but obviously with all the other things, he'll probably make about $1 million, between $1 million and $1.5 million each year that he's there.
Stoops' base is low.
Yeah.
Cal's base was low. Everybody knows it's all the other stuff. Okay. So here's my point. It was in Barry Odom's best interest to somehow take care of this privately. And I got to tell you, when you are a head football coach, you are a CEO of a corporation. Now, everybody talks about, and I buy it, and I don't know if they have a general manager, but general managers are popping up at big schools all across the country, managing the NIL. You report directly to the head coach and you take care of all the crap, and then you have a meeting and you tell the coach what's going on. No offer happens without the coach knowing. None. If I was a coach and I didn't know the offer, whew, that GM wouldn't last. It's a relationship kind of thing. That's pretty normal. Somebody should have said the $100,000 that it would cost to take care of this privately could cost you a fortune down the road. So it's easy for me to say it's not my money. $100,000 isn't a lot of money. In this case, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. Plus, anybody consider what this has done to the mental outlook of that football team?
Oh,
getting ready to play a game? Yeah. And by the way, is a backup quarterback any good? I have no idea.
It's UNLV. You would assume not.
And this is kind of a jerky thing. Could the backup quarterback say, guess what? If you don't give me some money, I'm leaving too.
I mean, if he really wants to do the selfish thing and not the team thing, yeah.
I tell you why I wouldn't, honestly.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm going, okay, I want to be the main guy. I want to be the starting quarterback. I really don't want to get it this way. But now that I have it, I'm going to take advantage of it. And we're 3-0, and it's my job to get it 4-0. And I don't want to be dealing with all this crap on the side. That's what I would do. Yeah. Easy for me to say sitting here in Lexington, Kentucky, and I'm, you know, past 70 years old, not too far from being 72. When you went to college, did you ever think you'd be a producer and talker on a show where the old guy was almost 72 years old? If somebody would have told you that, what would you have said?
I would have probably said they're crazy.
Oh, I think you'd have said more than that. I think you'd have said a lot more than that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, and that's okay. Point being is this. I think Odom's got some bad advice. And you can say, well, it's pressurized in the moment. You can't think, well, what the hell are you supposed to do when it's third and four with 43 seconds to go? You got to make a quick decision. Jimmy, do you see where I'm coming from? That Vegas allowing this story to happen. Now, is it almost, you know, pointing a water pistol at them by the quarterback? You could say that. By the way, do you believe that this quarterback and his father is correct?
That it was the whole thing, that it was, there was a verbal agreement with the contract?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you that there's, I just don't understand in this day and age of NIL, if the kid's good enough to go to a UNLV level school, that no other schools would have offered him any sort of money, so he just chose to go there with no other offers for NIL for free, with only $3,000 in moving expenses.
And now I saw a report that apparently he didn't get that either, so I have no idea. Some of this stuff, I don't know whether it's true. Well, you know, a couple of things to play into this. Is it possible somebody offered $130,000, but he thought there was a better chance of winning there? Maybe he thought there was a better chance of the talent around him. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Jasper Johnson didn't take the highest offer. He got a lot of money, whatever the hell it was.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know the variables. I'm not going to spend my time looking into it. The point is, this is just really stupid. And I just wanted to repeat the thing with my buddy Dick Hoops Weiss, is that it's going to be signed contracts. And I stand by what he said first. Jimmy, you're a company. And you're a local car dealership here in Lexington, and you're very successful, and you are taking care of, let's say, a senior tailback, and you're giving them really good money, and you're happy with the relationship. Don't you want to make sure with everything that you've given to this player that that player plays for the entire season, which includes the bowl game?
Yeah.
I think, and I've said this before, one of the biggest changes that's going to happen is companies are going to insist that you play for the entire season and the bowl game.
That's the big thing.
Well, you're a car dealer, okay? Let's say Kentucky has a great season and they finally make the, you know, one of the big bowl games and stuff like that. And you're the tailback and you opt out and Kentucky wins that game. Kentucky wins that game. And you've given this player all this money, and when you could really reap the awards of giving this player money to get something back in return, player's not there. I think it's dumber than a box of rocks. That's just me.
And I feel like these are the learning curves that everyone's having to make. Like everyone playing right now, the teams, the NIL, the collectives, the businesses doing this, we're all a part of the guinea pig phase of all of this because there's nothing to go off of. And 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, remember when they didn't make these kids sign contracts to play the full season? Remember when, you know, all these handshake agreements, there's going to be talks looking back at the time that we're in now about how the crazy decisions that were made.
You're right. But I blame the businesses for that. I don't blame the players.
Oh, yeah, the players in this, they're just looking to get whatever kind of money. The players are just the ones trying to get by and do it. They also, I mean, think about it. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. How are they supposed to know any different?
No, they don't. But if I'm a car dealership and I'm giving a kid a car and plus money and he's doing commercials, hey, I want to see the whole season. You're going to a big bowl game. It's a lot of publicity. And now you're going to go work out. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. And I bet that changes. But I blame the businesses for not insisting. And you know what? It's pretty simple. If you don't want to agree to play the entire season and a potential bowl game, it's okay.
Yeah.
We'll give the money to somebody else. Maybe you won't get the star quarterback, but I think that could change quickly. A couple of tidbits. I've been sitting on this for a couple of days, and I find this fascinating. The sixth highest paid starting pitchers in the major leagues made $233 million this year. Have you seen this, Jimmy?
No.
And this was as of the other day, and I don't think it's changed. If it is, big deal. Take a guess as to how many wins $233 million in salaries this year for the sixth highest paid pitchers in baseball as of the other day. How many wins they had combined?
Ooh, my initial guess was going to be how many of them are even still pitching right now. I'm going to guess 10 between all of them.
Wow. I thought it'd be low 20s.
Uh-huh.
It was 19 as of the other day.
Okay. Yeah. For six pitchers.
Yeah, I'm not big on giving pitchers long-term contracts. I'm not big on long-term contracts anyway. I've been that way for a long, long time. I want to wish good luck to Tommy Kramer. I liked him. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. I was with the Vikings. Thought he had a good career. He's got dementia. And a few days ago, Brett Favre says he's got Parkinson's. And what Kramer is saying, hey, don't feel sorry for me. Doctors say I've got 2 to 10 years. He stopped drinking. Doesn't want any sympathy. And he says the NFL will help with the bills that insurance doesn't take care of. And they should. And they should. And I have read this before. I'm not a doctor. Don't play one on TV. But concussions can be linked to Parkinson's. And I think a lot of people know that. So, and you look at Brett Favre, you know, you're talking about one of the toughest, strongest guys of all time. Da, 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 da. By the way, you know how Brett Favre became Brett Favre?
How?
Against the Bengals. Who is the starting quarterback? Started with an M, long name, got hurt. He comes in, starts slinging the ball around like crazy. And as they say, the rest is history. Majakowski or something, first name Don.
Oh, Don Majakowski. Yeah.
Bingo. He was the starting quarterback for Green Bay because I remember, I think it was only one time where Green Bay played the Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium. And so when I'm doing the pregame show, I'm there way early. I mean, super, super early. One, we go on the air an hour and a half before the game. And two, I'm there at least an hour and a half before the hour and a half pregame show. And so oftentimes there's nobody on the field or there might be a couple kickers. Sometimes guys that aren't going to play are jogging around and getting a light workout in. They can't play just to break into a sweat. There's really nothing going on. But you get to see the guys warm up. And I want to tell you, watching Brett Favre warm up, it's like he's like the guy who there's no stretching. He just – usually most quarterbacks, this is very typical, about 99.9% of the quarterbacks that I saw outside Brett Favre, they'll kind of toss the ball, and then they'll go back a little bit further and toss the ball. And rarely are they throwing these really hard line drives. They'll end up throwing a lot of these guys the balls 50, 60 yards in the air, but it's not with the velocity when the game. They're stretching their arm out and stuff like that. Favre comes on there, and after a couple passes, boom! He's just winging it.
Yeah.
And some of the fun, what I call shows, are before the game. It's like one of the things I always wanted to do, and I had heard about it, and obviously I never got a chance to do it, when Larry Bird played, and there was like a, 7:30 game in Boston or wherever he was. He was out there 5 o'clock by himself shooting. All the time. Can you imagine the joy of watching him shoot by himself?
It would have to just feel like you're in a movie watching because all the shots just go in. And it's got like even more impressive, like there's no one around, not a game, but just how efficient he would be at everything. And like Steph Curry with his warmups where you just watch him and he'll make 30, 35 shots in a row. No one's around. No one's looking. A reporter has a camera or whatever filming it. But you're just like, wow, these guys, even when the lights aren't on, they're still, you have to remind yourself, oh, yeah, they are that good all the time.
Yeah, all the time. It's kind of amazing, you know, how good it is. I would love to have seen it. Love to. Terry Page. Call today for your appointment. She loves to say you don't have to live with your pain. She's helped tremendously. A brilliant licensed massage therapist who's into the body on levels and degrees that's I'm beginning to understand, but I still don't understand. She's a life and health coach, an herbalist, and what she's done for me is off the charts. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. 859-373-0578. 859-373-0578. 859-373-0578. Chip Rupp coming up next. Dennis Johnson at 1 o'clock. Have a whole lot of interviews that I think we'll play after Dennis Johnson, it looks like. We got a lot of good football stuff and interviews to talk about and to play. One of the guests tomorrow will be Tony Delk. just went in the Hall of Fame. Tony, one of my favorite people. You know, when I think of him, I still think about, I was there in Jersey when they won the national championship, him falling out of bounds, literally, Jimmy. I'm sure you've seen the shot. At the end of the half to make a three, he couldn't miss if he tried. Nice guys can't finish first. Tony Delk, Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN.
No, with
Alan
Cutler last week.
Podcasts on Apple, it. Spotify, and Google Monday through Friday.
There's no like standing on a chair and rah-rah stuff like that. It's kind of just do our stuff, you know, do your job. At the end of the day, if we do our job on offense, we're going to move the ball and hopefully get in the end zone. But well, we got a good game plan going. We got good dudes out there that are going to try to go execute that. So nothing crazy, nothing polar opposite of what we've been doing and been trying to do.
That's Brock talking about getting ready for Ole Miss, and I can't imagine him standing on a chair yelling and screaming. It's like, okay, do your job. That's kind of the way things go today. We're going to switch first a little basketball, and we're going to throw a little football in here too. Chip Rupp, kind enough to join us. Chip, how you been, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm honored to have you. We're talking so much football, we can't negate the fact that, madness is almost here, blue-white, season's not that far away. I don't know if you've been in practice. I'm assuming there are certain things you can and can't say. That's the way it goes. But I think you've seen some of the fellas. Do you get a feel as to what's going on?
So I do. I stopped by last week to watch practice, and don't want to share too much about what I saw, but I was impressed. It was the first time that I got to see Kobe Brea on the court. When I saw him back during the summer, he had a toe injury and missed practice. The guy can plain flat out shoot. There's the other guy, Lamont Butler. I mean, he is just, he's so tough. He brings a physical toughness. He's probably not as raw skilled as some of the point guards that we've had in previous years, but he brings just such a toughness. And when he's going to the rim, he's going to punish you. I mean, if you chest him, he's going to deliver a blow, and he's going to get the ball above the rim and get it in. He is just an incredibly tough guy. And I think our season, as he goes, will determine how our season goes.
He's a tough guy. And I'm not saying the other guys aren't tough, but I think he's a tough guy. And the physicality of this team will be uplifted from him, because they got a lot of old guys, six seniors and all that kind of stuff. And some of these guys have been shaving for years, which is great. And I like that kind of experience, but I think his toughness will uplift everyone else's toughness. No, I'm not saying they're wimps. That's not where I'm coming from. I think they'd be tough without him. I think they'll be tougher, and everybody will raise their game even more in the toughness area, because he's the guy going to have the ball in his hands.
For sure. A couple other observations. I loved the competitive spirit of the guys. Had a chance to witness a full court shooting drill. So basically, you'd come down with three guys. The lead guy would shoot a layup. The two trailing guys would hit the 3-point line and would receive a pass from two guys on the other baseline. And the goal of the whole drill was over a 2-minute time period to score 160 points. And they got incredibly close multiple times.
Seriously? Wait. Say this again. You're blowing my basketball mind away. How did they do this?
So it was a full court shooting drill. And what would happen is you would have two guys on the baseline. They would throw an outlet pass to a player, and he would dribble the length of the court as fast as he could. Okay. And he would lay it up. For that, you get 2 points. The two guys that had passed him the ball would trail the play like you would on a fast break. And then two guys on the opposite baseline would throw them each a ball, and they would shoot a 3-pointer. And so essentially you had the opportunity to get 8 points every trip down the court if everybody hits. And you have to conceptualize it, because it wasn't always guards trailing the play. So, you know, you had the bigs, you had Garrison, Williams, those guys trailing the play, having to shoot 3-pointers. And, you know, I don't know the metrics of how it all worked out, but you had to pretty much come away with 5 points every time, or you weren't going to get there. And so they ran it multiple times. It was an exhausting drill. And, you know, Mark had the ability to to stop it. He kind of came out and said, you know, okay, guys, good effort. And Kura Kurisa stepped up and said, no, coach, we got this. And they ran it two more times voluntarily. They could have bailed out. And they finally got it at the end. And it was one of the bigs that hit the last second shot to get them out of the drill. And they all stormed on the court, you know, swarmed him. You would have thought they'd just won the NCAA tournament. The team environment, the team spirit is just much different than it's been in previous years.
Oh my goodness. I like everything what you said, but maybe number one for me was that Kerr said, no, no, coach, we're going to run this back. And I'm sure Pope inside had to be smiling like crazy. Okay, you guys want to run it back? Go ahead and run it back. I mean, you know, player-driven, that kind of thing. That's really, really cool. By the way, can Garrison shoot a three?
Yeah, Garrison can shoot it. Now, the guy that I don't really want to see shoot a whole lot of threes is Williams. But the interesting part of that is, even with him out there, and his jump shot is not a thing of beauty, Mark still encourages him. If you've got a wide open look, take the shot. And, you know, I don't expect him to take many shots this year. He shouldn't. But nonetheless, Mark gave him the green light. He wants these guys shooting it. And I will tell you this, they're going to play incredibly fast. I would say if we're 15 seconds into the shot clock and something hasn't gone up, there's been a major breakdown. That's how fast they're playing. It comes out of the net and they're gone.
Were they doing the 14-second clock when you were there, that he starts the clock at 14 seconds and you better shoot the ball within 14 seconds? Like, once you have a good shot, just take it. Don't look for a better shot, as long as it's a good shot?
Not the day that I was there, but he put such a premium on. So in previous years, and I'm not comparing regimes, every coach has their own philosophy, but how many times do we walk the ball up the court the last 10, 12 years? We run a high post weave and get it down to about 10 seconds, and then we try to belay our way in and take a contested shot in the lane. Here, he is really emphasizing ball movement. Let's pass it, because the facts are we're all taught from when we're kids, passing the ball, you can move the ball quicker than you can pounding the air out of it. And so he is really putting a premium on moving the ball via the pass, and it translates. I mean, they are incredibly quick getting the ball up the court. They move it quick on the perimeter and get uncontested shots, and they shoot it very well, very well.
You know, that reminds me of your grandfather, because the old timers, and most of those fellows who told me are obviously not around. Mm-hmm. And I say that with respect, not morbid. It just, you know, time is what time is. But they would say that Adolph Rupp didn't want the ball in practice to be dribbled. He just wanted to hear, the only voice talking in practice was him, and he wanted to hear the sound of the sneakers squeaking on the floor, right, and nothing else, and he didn't want you dribbling in a lot of the drills. Pass it up, pass it up, pass it up, pass it up. So when I heard that about Pope the first time, I thought of your grandfather.
Yeah, he wanted passing. I mean, from a very early age, and you know, my grandfather, I was so young when he passed, he didn't really share much about basketball. I mean, most of our discussions were just about life. But you know, I got most of my coaching through my dad, and he just, everything that he told me had come from my grandfather. He just said, you know, you can move the ball up the court much faster if you're passing the ball as opposed to pounding the air out of it, and That's what I see in Mark's teams. It feels, without sharing too much, it feels very similar to watching a Pitino team. It really does.
Makes sense. And yeah. I'm going to assume the same thing will happen, not to compare to Pitino, but the styles are similar. Mark's got his stamp on his thing. Patino's got his stamp on it. You know, everybody does a little differently, that there are going to be games where the players will see that the opposing team is tugging on their shorts, bending over. They're a little tired. And you can look for Kentucky going on a run. And these kids will collectively start seeing that, and it'll inspire them, as, you know, Pitino's first team, those guys, they've all told me, when we saw somebody tugging on the shorts, we knew we were going on a run. Why wouldn't it be the same now?
And he alluded to that last week when he brought him in on, I was there on, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. He said, you know, we're off this weekend, and then we're ready to go full time next week. And he alluded to the fact that this week's going to be a tough week because they're going 2 days. You know, they're at 6 a.m. and then they're in the afternoon. And he said, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to be sore. You're going to be in the cold tub. but this is basically Hell Week, and you're going to get through it, and you're going to be better for it. And then in the next 3 weeks, we're going to play scrimmages and be ready to go. And so I imagine they're exhausted this week. It's a pretty tough week.
It's okay. They're young.
I think it's great. I think it's great. And that's the beauty of the cold tub. It'll keep you going.
Okay. Did you get a temperature that how deep some of these threes were shooting? Were they normal threes? That's a silly comment on my part. You know, since the advent of somebody named Steph Curry, there's no such thing as a normal three. The normal three is now whatever. Let me rephrase this. Are they shooting deeper than you expected, or did you expect it this deep? Or perhaps the best way to put it, how deep are some of these threes?
There's a handful of guys that have, you know, confident NBA range. They're shooting 23, 24 footers. I did not see anybody pulling up from incredibly deep like Tayshaun Prince did against North Carolina years ago. But, they're all capable shooters. I mean, they don't take long twos. I mean, they make sure they're behind the line and all the way down the roster. I mean, every guy is capable of shooting it, with the exception of Williams. And he hits a few, but his jump shot is not a pure thing. Now, he's a freak athlete. He's going to pound the boards, and he's going to do great things for you. But that's probably not going to be the best use of his time is firing threes.
Could you get a feel, this might be a silly question, that they're in better shape today than they were in the summertime? Has that changed already? And I'm sure it's changing this week.
Yeah, no, I think they're in really good shape to be starting out the season. I left practice incredibly encouraged. After seeing Brea, when I was there back during the summer, I did not get to see Butler play. And I can't say enough good things about him. Jackson Robinson's an interesting guy to me. We talked in the offseason when he was still in the NBA draft, and we were hoping that we would get him, but you made the comment. You said he's not necessarily the guy that's going to go and get you a bucket. Like we've had in the past, he's capable of doing that, but he really doesn't. He doesn't strike me as that guy. He is a good piece. He has NBA talent, but he does whatever's necessary for the team to succeed. And so a lot of times he's not looking for a shot. He'll use his length to get in there and distribute. And, but he's not a guy that strikes me as going to take over a game at any one point.
You know, when coaches, Chip Rupp, kind enough to join us for a couple more minutes, when coaches say, which drives me crazy, by the way, and as a player, I'm curious if you feel the same way. It doesn't matter who starts, just who finishes the game. Talk to the player. Now, they're not going to admit it to the media and stuff like that, but talk to the player, please. I've never bought that, and that goes back to since I was a child. A child. Now, be that as it may, I think it's going to be fascinating to see who does start. And I have no inside information, and I'm looking at it this way. Anybody who on this team who plays in the NBA, the odds are about 50-1. Make that 100-1. Make that 200-1. They ain't starting next year. They're not starting next year. It's not going to happen. There's not one kid on this team. I'm not saying somebody's not going to play in the NBA because I don't believe that. I think there are going to be NBA players, second rounders, whatever. I'm not going to go on that tangent now. I've done it before. But the point is this. I don't know what the hell's Mark's thinking. It wouldn't surprise me, even if Jackson Robinson is one of the best five players, that it would be easy for Mark to sell him to be the sixth man for two reasons. One, the kid trusts Mark as much as any family member he has. Two, he was a great sixth man in the league last year. Three, in the NBA next year, if he gets to be the sixth man, he's really moved up a lot. Four, that could allow somebody else to start. And five, he might be more valuable. And so I've seen a couple of these things where these national guys, maybe they have inside, I don't know, whatever, where I've seen Jackson Robinson as one of the starters. I'm going, yeah, they could be right. But because you have so many who could start, he's one guy that I don't think will start. Because he's had that role before, and they need people in that role. And most of these kids are used to starting, so that might upset him a little bit. And they might be worried about the playing time. But he's the one guy of all the guys that are worthy of starting that you don't have to start. And it might be better for him in the future and the team in the future. And I go, one more, Chip, and then I'll shut up. I want you to rant back. What I'm thinking is these guys need to know how to come off the bench because, in all probability, that is their future.
Well, it's pretty good analysis. I didn't really think of it that way. Jackson had great success as sixth man of the year last year, coming off the bench at BYU. So, I think your thought process is solid, and I think he could be great in that role. What I would say is I did not have the feeling, by the way, that Mark had the guy split up, that he really knows who's going to start yet. I think that there's going to be a lot of competition in these early season exhibitions before he lands on a lineup. Right now he's feeling his way along to see how all the pieces fit, who adapts to his system. So, I mean, Jackson very well could come off the bench. But, you know, Alan, we talked about it with Dillingham and Shepherd, and everybody was so upset that they didn't start. And one thing that I've always believed, I don't really care who starts. They have five spots, and not everybody can start. The most important thing is who plays the most minutes and who's there at the end, because the end is when it matters. I mean, yes, it's nice to get off to a good start, but only so many guys can start. And I think that Mark's not settled on a starting lineup yet. And I think he'll experiment with a lot of different pieces because he has a lot to work with.
And a long time between now and then. And somebody might step up as they get in better shape and playing better 2 weeks from now than now. Yeah, I have no idea. I'm just saying it's a good thing to sell these kids honestly and legitimately. Hey, anybody thinks they're going to start in the NBA next year?
Yeah.
So as long as you get your minutes, you better learn how to come off the bench and observe what's going on and have your head in the game and see what the team needs. And seeing what the other team is doing, it actually could be beneficial to some of these guys because you can make a case easy for seven or eight guys starting. I mean, easily. And it depends upon whatever he wants. Any other basketball thought before I want to play a soundbite for you?
Yeah, the last thing I'll say for the fan base, I am incredibly excited about this upcoming season based on what I've seen. I think the style of play is going to be something that the fan base is going to love. And with them playing at the speed that they're going to, you can't really get caught up on whether you're starting or coming off the bench because you're going to be exhausted. I mean, there's going to be room to play 10 easily. Not necessarily a platoon system, but they get up and down the court.
22 minutes playing for Pope will have your legs feeling after the game like, I did something!
Yes, yes.
Okay, I want to flip the football.
Okay.
And I think the world of Tony Franklin. I think he's one of the smartest guys around. And he's one of the guys who loves to talk like I do, yet he has the ability, and I love this about Tony, that as a coach, sometimes you got to know when to shut up. This is a guy who doesn't stop talking, that there's a time to leave kids do their thing, and there's a time to tell them what to do and share what to do and try to get them what to do it themselves. I love it a lot. So I have been ranting, and as much as I respect Stoops, which I do, and I keep on saying this because I don't want anybody to get it the wrong way, I did not like the fact that they didn't against Georgia throw the ball in the end zone with 9 seconds to go. And as Aaron Gershon said it better than me when he was on the show, he said, yeah, and if you can't hit your guy, throw the damn ball on Nicholsville Road to make sure you have enough time to kick a field goal. Fine. Then I didn't like it. First of all, I didn't like the fact in second and eight at the end of the game that they were gashing Georgia for over 200 yards. I don't count the minuses for the sack yardage. It's a terrible stat, neither here nor there. But I could not believe they didn't run the ball on second and third down because they were gashing Georgia. I thought that was dumber than a box of rocks, and I still didn't like that they punted the ball because of the probability of how much time was going to be left, and Georgia has a hell of a punter. So looking at Stoops, everybody knows that Tony Franklin is an offensive guy, and I think he's brilliant. Chip, I want you to listen to this, and I think this is one of the better sound bites we're going to get all year. I'm not kidding you, and you might disagree, and you're going to tell me if you disagree. But he looks at Mark Stoops, the coach, the side of the ball he comes from. There's nothing negative where I'm coming from, and what the brain waves will do based upon his training. This is Tony Franklin.
Well, I think it's always this. I think there's probably, in the coaching world, there's always two brains that work. There's the brain that comes from a defensive background and the brain that comes from an offensive background. There's a brain that comes from a gambler and a brain that comes from a conservative. And I think that in Coach Stoops' case is that it's the brain that comes from a defensive background and a brain that comes from a conservative background. Whereas if you look at, you know, some other people that are out there, Lane Kiffin would have probably thrown it in the end zone and done that. So it's two different ways of that you've been raised to think, and that through your experiences in life that you now have. So when you get into critical situations, you're almost always going to revert back to that. I think a lot of people today rely on analytics so much that you lose your football brain.
Mr. Chip Rupp, grandson of Adolf. I personally think that's a brilliant soundbite, but your comments, sir.
No, I agree. Going back to that game, I was at the game. As it is with being a head coach, everybody second guesses you. After hearing his post-game comments on having the two-minute timeout plus all of his timeouts and the way that his defense had played, I understand where he was coming from. But when you have an opportunity coming off of just a terrible game against South Carolina to do something that hasn't been done in almost 3 years, and that's beat Georgia in a regular season football game, you know, the fan side of me would have liked to have seen him take a shot at it. You know, Tony worked with Al Mummy, and, you know, Al Mummy, he just wanted to outscore you. He wasn't going to lock you down defensively. And if he wanted the ball last, he would just let you score. So he had it last. They were two opposite ends of the spectrum. I would love for us to have landed somewhere in between. But honestly, I can't second guess Stoops. I guess the one thing that I would have liked to have seen is where we were. Let's go ahead and take a shot. Even though Georgia is coming at you and it's fourth down, maybe you don't get it. You're going to turn it over on what, the 35-yard line, and your team is playing great defensively. Well, we punted it and it went in the end zone, so they got it on the 25 anyway, right? So, I mean, what did we really lose? And, but you know, in the heat of battle, I think Stoops, I think 15 years ago or whenever he got here, 14, I questioned a lot of his calls. I think he surrounded himself with some good guys, and they all had their heads together on it. And he wanted to play to his strengths. His defense was phenomenal that day. So that's where I land.
And if you go for it on fourth down and you'll make it, then your defense can be phenomenal again. And guess what?
Yep. I would have liked to have taken a shot. What I will say about that sound bite is, Tony Franklin is one of the brightest guys out there. He needs to be in the game of football somewhere. Don't really understand why he isn't, but every time I hear him, he is just an incredibly bright guy and an offensive mastermind.
He is a mastermind. I don't like this term blacklisted. I really don't. But I'm shocked he's not working somewhere. I mean, absolutely shocked. And if it's not in the SEC, there are so many programs, you know, the Boise States of the world. I mean, really good programs that could use his mind. Even if he was, I guess what I would have liked is if Saban would have hired him as one of those offensive assistants guys who sit upstairs, that kind of thing, where I think Saban could have learned some things from Tony, and I think Tony could have learned some things from Saban. And by the way, Saban learns from a lot of people. As brilliant as he is, one of the reasons why he's brilliant, he learns things and then he incorporates into his own cranium what he wants to use. Had Saban hired him for, you know, the $100,000 or whatever to sit upstairs, that kind of thing, Tony would have been plucked the following year. The following year. And I think it's sad. You know, the other thing about Tony, and I'll let you go right at this. The other thing about Tony, which I respect a lot, he and Hal don't talk. They'll never talk. They'll never be friends. Just by the way the relationship is. And he brought it up. But what I like is that Tony has a great deal of respect of what Hal did here. And so one of the things about me that's one of my pet peeves is that when somebody doesn't have a relationship with somebody, they tend to negate the talent that that person has. It's another reason why I like Tony. He and Hal are oil and water. Fine, forget about it. That's not the purpose of me bringing that up. But the purpose is he can still respect what Hal did here and how special it was when Hal was here. And what a hell of a coaching staff offensively they have.
Yeah.
But he should be coaching. It drives me crazy that he's not coaching.
He would be good for the game. He would be great in a role like you mentioned for Saban. I would love to see a guy like that in the press box for us. He is an offensive mastermind, and you know, he came from that tree. Al Mummy, Mike Leach, you know, Tony Franklin. That was quite a group that he had assembled.
I think he could be a nice fatherly figure for Bush Hamden, who will end up going very far one of these days.
So I hope Bush has some antics up his sleeve for this weekend, because we're going to need him.
Yep.
It's going to be a tough game.
Before we say goodbye, how optimistic are you about what would you – this is not fair, Chip, but what do you think the odds – no, percentage that Kentucky can win this game? Because I think they have a shot.
I think it's all going to be determined by if the offense can move the ball and can get in the end zone, and we don't turn it over in favorable yardage where Ole Miss can get some quick hitters. They're clicking on all cylinders. I mean, when you look at their wide receivers, they get separation, and Jackson Dart is just spot on. I mean, he is dropping dimes to these guys, and they're scoring at an incredibly fast pace. That said, what I'd like to see happen is I hope there's something up Bush's sleeve where we get to see a little bit more Gavin Wimsett this week. Even though he's played during mop-up duty, he's a poised guy. I don't think the way to use him is coming in as a wildcat guy where they stack the box and they know that he's going to run it. I think he's capable enough to throw some slants and some little quick hitters to get the defense off balance and then use his legs. And so hopefully it's not a knock on Brock. I mean, I think he's doing a fine job and he's shaking off a lot of rust. But I would like to see us throw them a curveball and play Gavin a little bit more this week.
Sounds good. Hey, Chip, always appreciate your time. Always a fun conversation. Don't be a stranger. Basketball's here. So hopefully you'll come back soon.
I can't wait.
Thank you.
Chip, hey, thanks so much.
Honored and pleased always to have Chip here. It's really good. I keep on saying this. I sound like a broken record. I'm so fortunate to have the people that are regular guests on here, not just as people, but as guests and their knowledge and that kind of thing. Jimmy, that's really, really good. It makes me excited about the basketball team, and I was already excited. Does it get you excited?
Oh, yeah, especially just the little insights from being at practice. That what he said about Kirk Risa and saying, no, we're going to finish this, like that just that gets you fired up.
And you're the coach, And one of the players said, no, coach, we're not done. We're going to run this back again.
That's one of those when you were hoping someone would say it, you turn around so they don't see you, but you get a big grin on your face. And you're like, yes, it's working. Yeah. Yes.
Knowing Popey probably had the grin right in front of them.
Yeah. It's just the little things like that where you're like, okay, all right, we got guys here.
Blue Lotus Health, 859-533-0914, 859-533-0914, acupuncture. Now also providing a licensed massage therapist. Check it out. Chinese medicine, the needles. And it's been a wonderful thing for me. Helping clean out my old body, which, you know, I think anybody my age needs help with that. I think acupuncture, I wish I did it 40 years ago. I hope I'm doing it 20 years from now. Use my name with Ramon. He's a special dude. On for sales road. 859-533-0914. 859-533-0914. Dennis Johnson, scheduled next. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN 92 Radio, 1300 and 92.5. WLXG Lexington, an LM Communications broadcasting station. The only no-filter sports show in Kentucky. It's the Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
Now, it'd be legitimate having Dennis Johnson on to talk about his high school football team. They're 5-0, or the fact that these high school kids get to go to California on a trip, which I want to ask him about. But everybody wants to talk about his son, Jasper. So we're going to do that, and then we'll do the other one, do both. And Dennis won. Mazel tov. Congratulations on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. How happy are you, obviously, that your son is happy, but how happy are you this is all now done, the decision where to go and the pressure and the gazillion? Did you get 1,000 phone calls yourself over the last year?
Absolutely. I mean, phone calls in the grocery store, in the mall, at football games, at practice. So, no, it was, I'm extremely happy to get over. Like I said, I kind of going through the process from when I was growing up. The social media aspect of it is so much more prevalent now. It just gives you so much more exposure, and people know what's going on. I told people, at certain points, I didn't know if I was Jasper Johnson's dad or not, because people knew more information about Jasper than I did. So it was kind of funny, but now we're excited to kind of get that chapter done with. And now, like I said, another chapter beginning with him being in overtime, and then when he gets done over time, the next chapter will begin at UK. So we're excited and happy for Jasper.
You know, did you ever think about getting a T-shirt Dennis Johnson, Woodford County, and on the back, I don't know what Jasper is doing.
I would have saved a lot of breaths if I did, because people were, they thought, you know, throughout the process, and people don't know, you know, we have, like I said before, him going to Link was probably the best thing, because the coach of me was able to kind of lessen, I could be more a father. So we had a chance to talk about a lot of things. We opened up about a lot of pluses and minuses, all that type of stuff. And so, you know, I ultimately, my wife and myself, we put in Jasper's hands. You know, after we, like I said, we had countless meetings. We went to each of the three schools. We were considering multiple times. And so at some point, Jasper had to make his own decision, and it wasn't a decision to be made by my wife or myself. And so, but now we're happy he made the decision and excited for the next step in his journey.
You know, it's kind of funny. I had some people hit me up, and then I would say, you don't know Dennis and his family, and you don't know his mom and dad. Well, Dennis is going to tell me he has to go to Kentucky. Went, first of all, Dennis is not going to tell me, but I guarantee you, I know the family a little bit. Dennis is not going to do that. He will not do it, because his dad didn't do it to him. His mom didn't do it to him. The whole world wanted you from Notre Dame and whatever. People forget that kind of thing. No, no, no. Dennis is there to help. Dennis is there to make sure his son has all the information, that his son will make the decision. And whatever it is, if he would have said Oshkosh U, believe me, Dennis, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson right. are going to be hugging him like crazy. It might cost you more in plane tickets, but you worked right. that out. But the point is, people didn't. I mean, I heard so much crap that I knew it wasn't true without even having to talk to you, because, you know, I've known you for, oh my gosh, 40 years.
Man, it's been a long time. It has been a long time.
Our hair, both of us, looked much different.
Yeah, but, yeah, I used to be, you know, UK, I had those dreads, and now you see now, so it's time has a funny way of showing and telling.
So why don't you grow the dreads back? Your kids would love it.
I can't. Yeah, two bald spots right here that will never go back. So, I'm bald forever now. This is the Dennis Johnson you always see from going forward.
Okay. See, people ask me, why do I have my hair so long? I say, because I still have it.
Right. If you got it, enjoy it now.
Especially at my age. At my age, were you ever to the point that you were concerned that the pressure was going to drive Jasper nuts? Because the part that I don't like, this is me now. This is me as a, you know, father, whatever. My kids didn't have that because I'm the dad. They're not going to have athletics genes. I mean, come on. They outkicked their coverage, which probably comes from mom, but that's neither here nor there. But were you ever worried that the pressure would get too much? Because I don't think 99% of the people have any understanding, and I'm not talking down to the 99% of people, I promise, but you know where I'm coming from. Understand the pressure. Look, you've dealt with pressure for a long time. That doesn't mean you should have to deal with it, but you did this. You were the top recruit and all that kind of stuff. Were you ever worried about the pressure getting to Jasper, that it would be too much, which is a legitimate thing? As much as Jasper is smart and mature and all that kind of stuff, but he is human and he is a kid.
Right. Well, I think the one thing we had a lot of open lines of communication. So from my wife's perspective, and then from my perspective, my brother's perspective, my mother's perspective, you know, we always had open dialogue and going through this whole process. We told Jasper, man, you have to do what's best for you. People are going to want you to do certain things for the rest of your life. You're going to be under a microscope, right? So people are going to always have advice. And it's funny how people have so much strong advice they would probably give Jasper, they wouldn't even give their own kids. You know what I'm saying? So, but we told him the whole time, like, listen, we are your parents and your family. We are going to support you whatever you do. So don't feel like you have any, you know, unwanted, undue pressure from your family, right? I know all the social media stuff comes out, but you got to do, this is the one time in your life you get to make the decision that's best for yourself and where you feel more comfortable, where you want to go. And so I think us having those open lines of communication and me being able to, you know, and I never make it about myself, but a few times I told him some stories I had about going through this process and just kind of to make sure he's comfortable with everything and really sure in his decision. And so he was able to do that. And so, but I just think the lines of communication within our family was really, really good. And so we had great people helping us throughout this process, which made it easier for Jasper.
Dennis, Dennis Johnson, kind enough to join us for a couple of minutes. He's got 8,000 things going on. I really like that line, which you said, that there are people giving your son advice, and I'm sure well-meaning. That's not the point. They're giving your son advice that they wouldn't even give their own kids. And when you stop and take a step back and think about it, and I'm not knocking him, but it is kind of ridiculous, no?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just like, I mean, some of the, I was in a restaurant. Raffy's one of my old guys. I used to teach with Jesse Clark, and this guy we're sitting, guy sitting right for us is packed in there, and he's telling me about Jasmine, what he should do. And my buddy's a really hard-nosed guy. And he wanted, I'm like, just relax, it's good. I get it all the time. But he was kind of, yeah, he needs to do this, he's going to do this, and yada, yada, yada. And I just, you know what I mean? I'm just like, yeah, I got you. You know what I'm saying? But it was just funny, some of the communication we got, and a lot of it was great. You know, a lot of it was just people who were supportive of our family, supportive of Jasmine since she's been young. But, you know, you have every once in a while people who, you know, I think my mom got harassed getting some food in Harrisburg one day with a guy who had a little food truck. So I had to come outside of the thing and tell the dude, like, he found out that my mom was Jasmine's granny, and he was kind of harassing her about, you knew where he's going and all that, and he had to come out of the food truck and like, yo, relax, man. You know what I'm saying? She's just trying to get something to eat. So you get some of that as well. But ultimately, it was a great experience, and the people of the Commonwealth are very passionate about UK basketball. And so anytime they can get a kid, you know, who has potential to be able to come there and have success, they want them to come to UK. But again, like I said, we told Jasper, like, you do what you got to do. We're going to support you as your family and be by your side 100%.
I don't think he scratched the surface of how good he's going to be, but that's me.
All right.
I don't think he scratched the surface. I really don't. I remember, you know, when your dad was still with us, when I saw him the Sweet 16, and mm-hmm. I saw this, and I say this with he was kind of like gangly, mm-hmm. and he hadn't filled out, and you know, there's nothing negative when I say gangly, and I'm going, and he was really athletic, and I'm going, oh my gosh, when he fills out, and the calendar turns a couple of years, and he fills out, because the feel for the game he had, you can't teach that, he has that, and his shot was okay then, but it's already much better, and I bet it's going to be great over the next couple of years. I bet it's going to be great. But he can put the ball on the floor. He's fearless. He'll take it to the hole. He's got a pull-up. I mean, he'll play defense. He's got a great teammate. I don't think he's even scratching the surface how good he's going to be a couple of years from now. And I'm guessing, since you know only 1,000 times better, I know you're biased. Duh, he's your blood. But you honestly see the same thing as a coach and as an athlete.
Absolutely, I'm a hard critic, right? I tell all the coaches, don't tell me what he does well. Tell me what he needs to work on, because I know it's hard to make it. Like, college basketball is hard with the dynamics, and if you're talking about even trying to get a chance to go to the pros, it's even harder. So I like to approach Jeff for the things he needs to work on: his body, right, feel for the game, making the right decisions on the defensive end, and I think all that stuff will come. I think, you know, we try to advance his knowledge and preparation throughout the years. Wilford County, then going to Link with Bill Armstrong, which is really great, playing with 10 other Division I guys, him being one of the younger guys, and then this year going to Overtime Elite, getting a chance to work with Corey Frazier, who had the Thompson Twins, and Rob Dillingham. We tried to advance his knowledge and prep for basketball. And I was talking to a guy the other day. I said, the one thing about myself and our family, I'm not afraid for Jasper to fail. I think in order to give yourself a chance, you have to fail, and you have to go play against the, you know, iron sharpens iron. And so we haven't been afraid to take that risk. You know, people said, well, you should have kept him in Wilford County. You know, everybody wanted to see him. But we're talking about the development and trying to get to a level that's really hard to get to, and very few people have a chance. And so we haven't been afraid as a family to take those risks, and it hasn't been all perfect, right? He's had some struggles, and he'll continue to have struggles, but I think along the process, he's been able to grow, and it's going to help him this year, and then ultimately as he gets ready to go to Kentucky in the year.
See, Dennis, I think that's great. I'm listening to – I don't read books anymore just because I read too much sports stuff. I listen to books all the time, and I'm going through Aaron Rodgers' book. It's really good. And you look at him now, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and stuff like that. Man, he had so many people who didn't want him and told him he couldn't do it, and he was right. Too small, and he was too short, and this and that and the other. Couldn't get a scholarship. He's sending tapes out. Half the time, he couldn't even get a rejection notice and stuff like that. And I'm absolutely convinced that those kinds of things, and he'll say it too, made him into the quarterback he is today, because he was so laser-focused that he wasn't afraid to fail, and failure is part of it. Matter of fact, if you have a perfect life and you don't fail, then when you fail, how the heck are you going to deal with it?
Well, I think a lot of problem with kids today, and I deal with them, you know, they AAU, and sometimes this stuff is misleading, and then when you get a coach like myself or some of these guys, and they put you in tough situations, and then you have to deal with failure, or not starting, or not catching 50 balls a game, or not getting 20 shots a game, or not going 3 for 3 in baseball, or scoring – then it's like, man, it's deflating. And so I think the earlier kids deal with that these days, the better you're going to be. And so for Jasper, right, even since he's been young, I'm just never a big fan of him being a gag guy. You know what I'm saying? I love – he's had a bunch of great coaches who've coached him hard. And then we've put him in a lot of different situations, Mr. Cutler, to be able to say, listen, you only had 4 points this game, but he's playing with the kids he didn't know, kids who are stronger, better, bigger, faster. And I just think that's how you grow as a human, first of all. I think it's how you grow as an athlete.
You're not going to tell me, and I don't need to know. But I love this about it. The decision he made had nothing to do with money. Whatever Absolutely. It was, you guys did well, and that's fine. God bless you. You deserve it. More power to you. That's not where I'm coming from, Dennis, and you already know me well enough to that. But the fact is, you had your son decide what he wanted to do because of what he wanted to do, not even because of the other stuff. And I wish more parents would listen to this, because in the long run, the odds of you not being happy diminish if you end up trusting your gut and making the decision that you think is best for yourself. And I think there are too many people that are chasing and chasing and chasing instead of like, what's going to make me happy? The other stuff will come. What's going to make me happy? And there's a lesson about what you guys did. I wish other people would just put that in their cranium.
Well, I'll say this, and I say this on another interview. I think KSR or something. I said, me and my wife work every day. I love my job. I love dealing with kids. She loves her job. I am not a slave to my son because he's a good basketball player. And ultimately, whatever the reason, some parents or whoever the adult in their life is, they have to be, because there is some financial compensation. But that's never been the case for my dad. Didn't do it with us, and we ultimately not going to do it with Jasper, because, like I said, what he does is going to be Jasper's. It's not going to affect how I live my life, or me and my wife going on vacation or having a good time or going out to eat. And I'm happy for my son, but ultimately I could not live with myself if I were to base his college decision or him going to overtime or whatever based off of a financial number. I just don't think that's right. I think ultimately it'll end it wrong. And if you do what you're supposed to do, knock on wood, a small percentage of people get a chance to gain some financial benefit if they do what they're supposed to do, which is a long way away from disaster. But we just, like I said, we just got to work and we're by our side. But I wouldn't be a good parent if I based any decision based off of financial gain.
You know, if I didn't ask you something ridiculous, you'd be suspicious, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
I see it turning.
You can, you know me too well. You can feel it, right? And it's not going to be on the subject that you think.
All right.
You can guarantee me right now that Woodford County undefeated is going to win the state championships. You want to tell the world that's absolutely going to happen?
I sure can. I wish I could. Now, we play really, really good to this point. So we got a battle suit, which we need, because we got a bunch of kids banged up. But I love my team, but I'm never, ever going to guarantee we're going to win the state championship, because it's hard to do. A lot of good teams in Kentucky and in five.
But you know how to push it a little bit with
it. I get it.
If not, you'd say, "What's wrong with Cutler? He didn't
get at me. I saw you looking at me. I said, "Oh, here it comes something." I've known you long enough to know here it comes.
But you thought it'd be about Jasper, didn't it?
Right. I thought you were going to ask me a financial question, but you flipped the script.
You know what?
I like it.
You know what? There are certain things, even though this is a conversation, there's certain things you should keep to yourself. Seriously. And I respect that. I mean, as a reporter, would I like the answer? Yes, but this is not that. This is about, God bless you, whatever you got, and that's great, more power to you. No, matter of fact, I would probably stop you from saying it. Seriously. You know, like, for example, I don't think Chip will mind me saying this. I've had a lot of people on, the Sean Woods and Chips and stuff like that, who have a closeness to the program, and what you might say in a private conversation, you know, you've done this your whole life. What you say on the air is two different things. And I don't have anybody come on the air to get themselves in trouble or go to. That's not what I do. This is a conversation with two old friends, and we happen to be doing sports talk. That's how I look at this.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
So I'll give you one more chance. You're going to guarantee a state championship for Woodford County?
I am not. As much as I would love to get the game, I am not, because it's too much. It's too much football to be played. And you got to remember, I'm dealing with 14 to 18-year-old kids who, depends on the day.
See, that's why you have no hair.
Absolutely. And this is grand. I cut it off all the time. You know what I'm
really?
saying?
You're trying to look younger for the kids. You don't want to see all that white stuff.
I don't want to see all those, you know, all that up on there. So I try to keep cut as much as possible.
Hey, bless your pal. I appreciate your time. I'm happy for your family success and doing it the right way. And there are other recruits on your son's level who could get some lessons with how you and your family handle this stuff, and I'm rooting for you. So, but you're going to promise me if you play the state championship, as busy you're going to be that week, you give me 10 minutes on the radio.
If we do, I'll promise you'll be my first. I promise I will.
I know you will.
Hey, I might even let you call two plays
in the championship game.
In the championship game, if we do it, you spoke this into existence. I might even let you come down and give you the headset and call you too. Now, maybe kickoff and extra point would be the two plays. I'll let you call us too. You know what I'm saying? Kick it. Glump for one. Glump for one.
You wonder why I was suspicious when you were saying that.
I saw those hands. I knew it. You had those hands. I knew it was something.
Hey, bless you, pal. Have a great year, and I hope we end up talking about, well, Jasper again. That'd be great. But, I mean, also about football again, as you guys are 5-0. Where's the game and what time is it if anybody wants to come see you guys?
We're off this week. Next week we play at South Oldham at 7:30 at South Oldham. So we're off this Friday. Next Friday we're at South Oldham for our first district game.
Sounds good. Hey, Dennis, thank you. Congratulations to your family. Appreciate your time, man, and bless your pal. I'll talk to you down the road.
God bless. I'll see you.
Take care. Back at you.
All right.
Dennis is great, Jimmy. You know, we've known each other so long that he knew we can't have a conversation with a little I'm telling you, and if you, I don't know his mom that well. I've talked to his mom, but I really didn't know his mom, who's obviously still around. But his dad was a pioneer. His dad was one of the great men that I've met in the state of Kentucky, literally in the state of Kentucky. And so there's a reason why, you know, the brothers are so good. Because of the toughness and fairness and the work ethic that they grew up with. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of his dad. Dennis is a big man, right?
Yeah.
He's small compared to his dad. There was a story one time. His dad was a Hall of Fame high school coach. And you know, had this been a different era and had he gotten into college coaching earlier, could I see him being a head coach at a place like Kentucky? Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, and been really, I mean, really, really good. Dennis told me the story one time. I forgot why. I don't remember the year. It's not important. But, you know, and they were winning all these games and stuff like that. Well, they lost a game that Alvis thought they should have won, whatever, and he's fired up. And apparently he puts 400 pounds on the bench press, right? and he's not a young man at this point. And he's benching 400 pounds and gets off and has a little fire in his eyes. Mm-hmm. And some other time we'll have Dennis to come back and tell some stories about his dad. His dad had kindness, helped out so many kids. I mean, Craig East lived with the family. I mean, he did so many things for so many kids, but there was another side. There was a toughness side that his presence, just looking at him, was intimidating. But then again, he was also very, very soft. And I used to tease Dennis that nobody's afraid of his father, his mother rules the house, which she did. Anyway, it's a great family. And I think the lesson learned that the final decision had nothing to do with money. And you can say, well, that's easy for you to say, Cutler, because they got a lot of money. You know what? More power to them, whatever they got. But how many people would say, I want the highest offer?
Oh, yeah.
And they just wanted Jasper to make the decision that what he wanted to do, and Dennis and his agent took care of the rest. And, you know, whether he spends 1 year or 2 years at Kentucky, I can't imagine four. That's the experience. That's the experience. And it's special. Really cool. Chip Rupp, Dennis Johnson. We'll have some football sound coming up next. What a joy. What a joy. Yeah, do I know him 40 years? Oh, yeah. Oof. Alan Cutler, 1,300. Is it 40? I'm going to have to figure out in the commercial break. Something like that. Is it more? Anyway, Alan Cutler, 1,300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM and on the ESPN Filter Radio with Alan Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google Monday through Friday.
Well, Brock has been on the road. He just ain't been a starter, but these young guys and some of these guys coming from like the Big Ten or some of these other schools, I tell them it's different. These games are like NFC games, them old NFC games with the Cowboys, Redskins, where it's going to be a physical game and the atmosphere is especially down there at 11 o'clock. I thought last time we played there, their crowd wouldn't be there, but they were there and they were ready to go. I guess they got the bars at 7 a.m. I don't know what happened. But they was juiced up, ready to go. So they will be ready for us.
You think he's implying they'll be juiced up and ready to go, Jimmy? What do you think?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure the message down there has been similar to, I forget which week it was last year when Stoops said, I hope Big Blue Nation go out there and pound some beers early.
That was a funny line. That was probably his funniest line of the year.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you haven't been to their campus for game day.
Uh-uh.
Old Miss. It's beautiful.
No, I hear it's really, really nice down there.
It's the nicest campus.
Yeah.
Have I been to every school? I haven't. Wait a second. I did not cover an Arkansas football game. Basketball, yes, but no. But before Texas and Oklahoma, I don't count them because I've been retired all those years. I think I went every place else. Absolutely the nicest campus. And some people think the Rolling Hills and the fraternities and the sororities and some of those people have the same spots where they've been, camping out before games forever. It's just a beautiful campus. So, that kind of game. I still think Kentucky has a chance. Now, they might lose 41-6, but do I think they have a chance? Yes. This is a powerful soundbite. It's number four, Jimmy. And this is, I believe, one of the strengths of Mark Stoops. And I mean this as a compliment because, as I've said many times, I'm not the only person saying this, you're a CEO of a corporation when you're the head of a team like a Kentucky or an LSU or an Ole Miss. That's what you are. Even at Boise State, you're a CEO of a company, and you've got to make sure the company's heading the right directions. And it was screwed up after South Carolina. It was. And you know what? They could have gone the other way. In other words, you can say, okay, well, Kentucky would have lost to Georgia anyway, but I think what Stoops did, what Vince is talking about, had everything to do with setting the tone for – granted, they lost against Georgia, but how they played against Georgia, that I don't believe would ever happen if Mark Stoops, the head coach, didn't do this.
I thought Mark Stoops did a really good job after the South Carolina game of really rallying the players, but also rallying the coaches. So I just look forward to, and I think our team looking forward to this challenge going down there.
Jimmy, how often do you hear another coach say that the head coach – rallied, well, the players, you hear that a lot, but the coaches as well. Yeah. I found that soundbite fascinating, by the way. Fascinating, because it's, some of these soundbites, as everybody knows, it's kind of similar, and we're looking for a little nuance here to see if there's something else there. I'm sure I've heard this thing before, but it's a rare sound. Did that really stick out to you, too?
Yeah, it did, and it stuck out also just the fact that Vince – wanted to get that out for his good buddy that he's, been with him for forever, that's who Stoops is behind the scenes. And I think that tells you a lot about Coach Stoops behind the scenes, that he is there to be like, hey, like there's, again, with the moral victory thing that's not like to be thrown around, but I think that tells you everything you need to know, that there were things to take away from that and that it wasn't just everyone's down in the dumps, we lost to Georgia, whatever. But I think it tells you a lot about who Coach Stoops is.
I think there's a second reason he said this too. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Vince isn't deaf. Vince has a really good pulse of social media and fans and stuff like that. And he knows all the crap Mark is taking about not going for it. You think I've mentioned it once or twice? And you think I'm the only one about, not going for it twice against Georgia. And I think he's such a good friend and teammate. Granted, Vince works for Mark, but there's a partnership there and a bond there that's got to be one of the best in the country. When you think about where they grew up, when you think about Vince's relationship with Mark Stoops' father how Mark Stoops' father was so important in him growing up, how the church for Vince, at the very beginning of our show, he talked about how the church changed his life, which is why he stays on these kids, you know, whether they come to Kentucky or not, because of the church and how he grew up and what he saw. I think part of the soundbite, he's pushing this out there. One, I believe it's absolutely true. Okay. And two, I think part of the reasons why he's saying it to take a little heat off Stoops and say, hey, look, appreciate my friend.
Yeah.
Appreciate my boss. And this is what he did that you all in the public and you all as fans, and how could I know? How would I know if he didn't say this? I wouldn't know. And part of this, it helps when they share information. Now, they're going to share only the positive stuff 99% of the time. We get that. But this is an important thing to share. And so this speaks volumes about Stoops, the CEO of a corporation, and the people part. And I go back to the thing, you know, after they lost to South Carolina, and I'm sure Cox wasn't the only one, but he's got Cox, the offensive lineman, who's going to be CEO of a company or something like that someday. And he's asking him, did I miss something? You're talking to your players. Did I miss something? What did you see? When you give of yourself and expose yourself to getting an answer that you might or might not like, and you want the answer to see if you can do to help improve your team in the program, I think it's tremendous. And I think it's one of the reasons why Stoops has turned the program around.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to with him meeting with Cox about that, in a similar note of how Tony Franklin said some coaches need to know when to shut up. Some coaches also, and it's that same thing of not having an ego, being able to go out to one of your veteran leaders on a team as a head coach and asking the player that you trust enough to where say, hey, I know I'm the head coach, I'm the leader, I'm the CEO, I'm Mark Stoops, but I'm not above asking a player to see, hey, what are you seeing? Are you seeing what I'm not seeing? And then taking that opinion in. That's big as a coach to be able to do that.
Yes, it is. And it's really coaching today. Not yeah. coaching in the 50s, not coaching in the 60s, not coaching in the 70s, or the turn of the century. Boy, that sounds weird, turn of the century. But if you want to relate to kids today, it's not the same as it was back then. The authoritative nature of how it was my way or the highway doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work, and that's kind of a good thing. So Kentucky's been close the last few times they've played Ole Miss. They've been close. And trust me, Stoops and Vince and all the coaches have been around a long time. They understand it. Some of the players understand it, too, because a lot of the guys on this team were around the last time. And so there's a feeling that, you know what, we were close. Some people thought we weren't going to be close. And this is an interesting perspective, clip number three, Jimmy, about where he thinks Kentucky's program is and Ole Miss's program. I'm not sure I agree with the temperature for today. But the first time they were close, I think that's a very fair comment, if that's what he was saying, and I think it is.
I don't know. I just think we both fighting for that upper echelon of being 2, 3, 4, 5 in the SEC. And I think, you know, when it comes down to these games, it was just good battle games. I think the defenses are better on both sides of them now. I mean, I think we scored a lot of points when it was here. And then I thought our defense played pretty well down there. It's just, you know, we had a couple of turnovers. And actually, that was the first game that Chris Rodriguez was back. So we were still trying to get in the groove with certain things. But it's going to be – this team is a little different. They got some guys. But we're looking forward to the challenge.
So the first time, I would agree. I don't agree today, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of thing he would say – out loud. I mean, Ole Miss thinks that they're going to play one of those January games. And I think that they will. And nobody thinks Kentucky's going to play one of those January games. It'd be unbelievable. If you beat Ole Miss, it starts to tame the temperature of the season around tremendously. I don't expect that they will. But there was a time that they were close. But the truth also is Ole Miss is shot up. They really have. And if you take a look at the record, what this guy has done, Kiffin, at Ole Miss, it's absolutely unequivocally off the charts. We'll look at that and more when we come back. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM and on the ESPN.
Member FDIC.
Back to No Filter Radio with Alan Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google, Monday through Friday.
Welcome back. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM. Take a look at Lane Kiffin. And I said this, I think it was before the season, earlier this week. He's a different person. And often in life, people change and you don't see the change. So it's his fifth season. They've been to a bowl game every single year, including not one, but two New Year's Six appearances. That's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And his record, Jimmy, is off the charts. He's 99-49 overall, right? That's you're talking around two-thirds. And at Ole Miss, he's 38-15. That's really special. I mean, this guy, let's put it this way. If he ever wanted to leave, they would pay him tons more, and I don't think he's going anywhere. And I have a couple reasons for that, because the way they've got the structure set up, leaving an Ole Miss for what's deemed a bigger school, with how they have the portal, with how kids will leave, he'd have to leave basically during the season, or a coach would have to retire like a Saban and hire a guy 3-4 days later to make it work, because you could have a cupboard bare at a great program or a change being made and you're just screwed. You're just screwed. And so it could be a lot worse if you spend your career at Ole Miss, right? I mean, think about it, Jimmy. Suppose he spends the next 10 years at Ole Miss. He is on the verge of playing for a national championship. I have no clue if he's going to do it this year, but the talent that he has, and Dart is so complimentary of Kiffin and all the things that he's learned playing for him. I mean, let's put it this way. If I'm the number one high school quarterback in the country, and I think I could play there, and you put a short list together of places to go to have the coach tutor you to become an NFL quarterback, I can't name five places better than Ole Miss. Now, is that a terrible thing to say for Kentucky fans?
It just might saying, be, but...
Well, that doesn't mean that Kentucky can't get a really good quarterback. I mean, look what they've done. And this actually speaks volumes of the change in Kentucky, and I've said this before. At a high school, there's no way that Brock was coming to Lexington, Kentucky. They didn't have a shot, and you know what, to getting him. Not a shot. And the fact that they could get him leading Georgia is a compliment to Kentucky. Seriously, it's a compliment. And it doesn't hurt that, you know, Leary and Levis were transfers and tasted a different amount of success. Levis now going through a lot of crap in the NFL. A lot of it's his fault. A lot of it's the offensive line fault. But the point is, when you look and see that Levis is in the NFL, does it mean something? Yes. Yes, it does. So if that bothers somebody, I don't know. Let's put it this way, Jimmy. Can you think of five other schools that you would want to go to if you were going to be a freshman quarterback with a shot of starting? Can you think of five other places you'd rather go to for that position than Ole Miss?
No. If there are five other schools, I would say Ole Miss is right there in that discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, you look, Jackson Dart, he was a four-star kid coming out of high school. So he was, it's not like he was a nobody, but the trajectory that he's gone has been a steady climb. And now, granted, a lot of that is his play. But you look at Lane Kiffin and just the offense they're running, the fun offense. If I'm a quarterback coming out of high school, I want to go somewhere like a Tennessee Ole Miss type offense.
Yeah.
Not saying those schools specifically, but that type of offense. And then you look at the success Lane Kiffin has had. It's the SEC. I mean, why not?
I would put Tennessee in that boat. Head coach is a former Heisman Trophy winner who's not shy about throwing the ball deep. Mm-hmm. What kid doesn't want to do that? Again, that's not a shot against Kentucky. That's just reality.
Yeah,
but the reality is, you know, they got Cutter Bowley waiting in the wings. Okay. If Joker Phillips was the head coach, there is no way Cutter Bowley would be here. That's a compliment to Stoops. If the wrong offensive coordinator was here, Cutter Bowley wouldn't have been here. Probably would end up at Tennessee. And so you can say, legitimately so, that Kentucky has moved up the ranks when it comes to that. And that's very legitimate. It is. But I'm sorry. This is no filter. And you can't say that a kid would rather play at Kentucky. I'm not talking to you if you're from the state of Kentucky. You're from California, okay? You're from Texas, okay? You're from Maine, okay? You're from Rhode Island. You're from Illinois. And it's between Kentucky and Ole Miss, but you can play next year. Ole Miss is going to have a leg up. Now, Kentucky has improved when it comes to that. This is the deepest quarterback room. You know, people are saying, and I've said this, that it's the deepest quarterback room that Stoops has had. I'm going to go one step further. I don't ever recall a quarterback room this deep. If it got down to Bill Allen playing, I'm good with that. I wondered if we were going to see Boley a little bit to get some snaps. And I'm sure it was a thought process that didn't work out and still redshirt him just to get him some snaps. But you got two quarterbacks you got to take care of. So that's an issue. And I get that. But no, when Mark Stoops got here, getting Cutter Boley to come here, I don't see it happening. Do you? I absolutely. When he first got here?
Ooh, yeah. No.
No. No. So it's rising when it comes to that. Okay, Deion Walker. He had an interesting comment. I've been to Ole Miss, and it's loud, and it's a fun atmosphere. It's nothing like Tennessee's. It's nothing like Florida's when they're winning. It's nothing like Georgia's, but it's nothing like South Carolina. But it's a nice atmosphere, and I bet it's loud and crazy because Ole Miss is really good. So where the players warm up, the students are there, and they're yelling and screaming at the players and stuff like that, and that's really normal. And this is from Deion Walker, and it's an obvious comment about the most important thing. If you're Deion Walker, you better put some pressure on Dart.
Just clip number one?
Clip number one.
I feel like it's vital. We got, you know, we got a great pass rushing defensive line. You know, we made great strides, and just to alleviate the pressure off of our DBs, off of our back end, just getting to him, affecting the pass, getting him off his spot is going to help a lot.
Not only that, to the obvious, clip number two, Ole Miss has a high-powered offense, and you got to be able to deal with it, which means there are times you're going to have to deal with giving up a big play, and there are times you're going to have to deal with giving up a big play, and it's, you know, he kind of says you can't get down in the dumps.
It's always a different kind of vibe going into the defensive unit room on Mondays when we know we're going to get such a high-intensity offense. You know, they outscore their opponents. That's what they take pride in. We take pride in not getting scored on. So, of course, there's always going to be that chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, you got the chip, and you got another thing. They play fast, and they get a lot of plays in, and it's difficult to sub. And you have to wonder, I'm not saying the Kentucky kids aren't in shape. There's no hidden message there, but it's different. Just like in basketball, there are teams who will play against Kentucky when they're shooting the ball in 14 seconds or less, when they're getting across the midcourt line in around 3 seconds, there are teams who are going to get tired playing Kentucky. You know, the comparison, as Chip Rupp has said, and many have said, and I've said, it's going to be similar but different to Patino ball. Mark has put his own stamp on things, which is great. And he's actually, with the passing and stuff, just slightly different, okay? As Patino has his own stamp and his own offense, and it's been really special. But you get tired, and you can't simulate it in practice. And so if they go on a long drive, you might not be able to sub some guys out. And if you're sucking air, the other team sees it. That's an unfortunately easy way to give up a big play. So, you know what? They play so fast at times. Deion knows this. Stoops has talked about it. Brad has talked about it. All the defensive coaches talked about it, that you're not going to be able to sub very much.
Going into Monday this week, he was, hey, they're a team that'll go for 2-3 minutes straight, nonstop. So we've been in all of our team run, team blitz periods, we've been tempo. Tempo every second or third play, you in for 8 or 9 plays just to get ready for that.
Now look at this way. You're saying 2-3 minutes. That's not much. Seriously. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Like you're straining. You're hitting another man who's 320 pounds and you're 350. You're straining and you can't go 2-3 minutes. My sense of that is, I've never done it, but I've talked to enough football players. Jimmy laughed because you play football. 3 minutes nonstop playing football without catching your breath. How bad is it if you're in shape?
It's terrible. And especially the linemen down in the middle.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Now, there's one thing if you're a DB and it's a run play and you could say, oh, never take any plays off. That's when they're catching their breath.
Yeah.
Now, those guys in the middle, they're literally, you cannot take half a rep off. So I can't imagine those guys down there in the trenches. And you can be in as good a shape as you want throughout the offseason and leading up to the week, but that extra adrenaline of being in the game, especially the early part of the game. Now, Grant, you could also say later in the game that's when it's worse because you're already gassed, but you can't explain how tired you get that quick of 3 minutes nonstop.
It's only one play that makes a difference. One play where you're out of breath and all of a sudden the wide receiver, boom, runs by you and it's a 50-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, you know Stoops is concerned about it. You know Brad White's concerned about it. You know the guys in the team are concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wonder if in the fourth quarter, let's say it's a game, right? I'm not predicting this. Would it shock me that, you know, let's say it's a tie game and Ole Miss has the ball and they've run 4 or 5 plays consecutively. Would it shock me if Stoops would take a timeout just so his team can catch their breath? No.
Yeah.
No. Do I think the coaching staff has talked about all kinds of possible scenarios about this? Don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. And that's when it takes either a good coach, just a feel for the game, talk about coaching and taking analytics out of it. That's when you need a feel for the game or a coach up in the booth that's seeing something. Maybe he sees one of the guys that's like, hey, you got to get one right now. You just need it. And trusting your other coaches with their eyes, what they're seeing, what they feel with the guys and being able to know that moment and take it, that could literally change the game.
Huge thanks to Dennis Johnson. Always a joy. Always a joy. One of the special families, sports-wise, and just a special family in the history of the Commonwealth. Good luck and mazel tov to the family and everything that they did. And Dennis's football team is 5-0. Always fun talking to Chip Rupp. Basketball time is Chip does a show every time I ask, as long as it fits in his schedule, and I'm lucky and blessed that he does it. And plus, our friendship is with both these guys. It's special, and I'm very fortunate that way. One of my favorite former Cats, now you can call Mr. Hall of Famer, Tony Delk, special guest tomorrow. Cameron Drummond also tomorrow. Sorry, Cameron, I'm giving Tony Delk top billing tomorrow. If Cameron's listening, he goes, I get it. Jimmy, as always, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Have yourself a great day. Please tell your friends about the show. The show is growing organically, and I need your help. Word of mouth has been huge. And so every now and then I ask for a little help, and I know every now and then I'm getting help, and every now and then I need to say even more. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Brad Taylor coming up next. Matthew and Jimmy tomorrow at 10. I will be back at noon. Have yourself a great day. Count your blessings. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.